Tigers and Royals both won last night, so the AL wildcard is still tied, while the NL wildcard gets massively disrupted by rain. We'll break it all down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Thursday, September 26th. Your home for news, notes, updates on Major League Baseball and what happened yesterday. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, we're going to get to the injuries in the AL East. We're going to get to the chaos in the NL wildcard because of weather. But before we do all of that, I want to talk about the AL wildcard. Because we still have a tie, we still don't have any clarity, but we did see one team eliminated from contention. So, Detroit Tigers, they take on the Tampa Bay Rays, they win 7-1. Leadoff home run for Parker Meadows, he goes 3-for-5, scores 2 runs. Spencer Torkelson goes deep in the 6th inning. They go 3-for-8 with runners in scoring position and just thoroughly dominate the Tampa Bay Rays. Flip side, Kansas City Royals, who have been slumping hard recently, just have not been able to get it done. They take down the Nationals 3-0. So, as of this morning, the update here, American League wild card, Detroit Tigers, Kansas City Royals have the second and third spots. They are tied at 84 and 74. The Minnesota Twins are 2 games out. The Seattle Mariners are 2.5 games out. The Boston Red Sox, who lost to the Blue Jays 6-1 yesterday, are officially eliminated. Is there any chance that the final two teams are not, at this point, the Tigers and the Royals?
It's hard to say no. It's hard to think that a team like the Twins or the Mariners are going to sneak up and do that just because of how great Detroit and it looks like Kansas City's finally figured it out. I will say this about Detroit. And I think that it's fair to say, and we said it yesterday, I don't want to play them. I don't want to play them in the wild card. I don't want to play them in the divisional round. I don't want to play them when they surprise everybody and go to the ALCS. Like, I don't want to do it. This team is very, very impressive. And what this young core is doing is just shocking the world. Parker Meadows' home run was amazing. The home run call, I know we talk about calls on the broadcast about things, but the call that Jason Benetti made on Spencer Torkelson's home run last night was perfect. He says, somebody alert NASA, because that thing was an absolute moonshot. It was perfect. And I can't wait till the offseason, because we are going to have an episode where we power rank broadcasters. And I think that's going to be an exciting, really exciting episode. Maybe not for our listeners, but definitely for you and me.
Yeah. And it'll also give us another chance to dig at the White Sox, because they let that dude walk. The owner did not like the style of his calls and how he used some analytics and things like that and let him walk. And it's like, what are you doing? So,
yeah. Well, the White Sox also don't like winning. So, I mean, there's a growing trend there.
True. The big story in here, I think, for the Tigers, other than obviously continuing to win, getting the great performances from Spencer Torkelson, Parker Meadows, guys like that, is the debut of Jackson Jobe, their top pitching prospect, one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball. He pitches a scoreless ninth, gets a ground out, gives up a single, gets a fielder's choice and a fly out. So no strikeouts, but pitches a scoreless ninth. Detroit's bullpen covered 6 1/3 innings in this game, 3 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, but no runs. For a team that really has made it work with 2 starters, right? They've really just used 2. It's Tarik Skubal every 5th day. And then other than that, they've really just they've gone with a bulk guy, like an opener, a bulk guy, and a couple different bullpen arms. Adding a dude like that, I feel like, can be pretty impactful. And getting him a little bit of experience before the postseason is great. I do want to clarify. He is on its the original roster for the postseason, assuming they make it. He is not eligible to be on that roster. He was not on the 40-man roster as of August 1st. I think it's August or September 1st. The eligibility rules, if you're in the organization but not on the 40-man roster, you can be in the postseason if you are approved by the commissioner's office on a petition as an injury replacement. I've heard a couple different podcasts and things like that get this wrong recently and not understand. They're like, well, what's the point of having the rule if you can just petition and get him on? He's eligible as a injury replacement only. He's not eligible on the original wildcard roster, again, assuming they make it, which we think they will. But being able to get a dude like that or have a guy like that come in, how big is that at this point in the season with the Tigers, in essence, having been in a playoff, in a playoff-like atmosphere for 3 weeks or a month now? How big is that, adding a dude like Jackson Jobe?
I think it's big for the team right now, and it's big for Jobe and the Tigers for the future in 2025. I'll focus just on right now because this team is having a great run. And if he does help out in the postseason, if he does get petitioned to move on, if there is some sort of injury, it'll be big that he had experience, you know, for the last six games or so before he's just thrown right into playoff baseball. You don't want to have the yips right in the postseason. I mean, let's be honest, his first couple of throws were high in 97. I mean, he was nervous. There were some nerves, and you don't want to have that when you're making an at bat or on the mound when you're in, you know, the seventh inning of game one of a wild card race, when you're the game is on the line, a win or go home game even too. So it's really good, and I think that's really impactful that they're giving him some sort of experience. And if he doesn't go on the playoff roster, you did get him some innings to make some adjustments for the offseason for 2025. So I think that's important. Mm-hmm. But even though he didn't get those strikeouts, it was an eventful first outing for Jobe. I will say that his dad looked more nervous than him in the stands. They kept showing his dad in the stands, and he was looking like he was trying to keep it cool. But you knew deep down inside that guy was screaming like a 6-year-old. He was so excited. Yeah, it was really exciting to watch Jobe. I think he's going to be really fun to watch. His secondary pitches, I think, are even better than his fastball, and I think that's going to be really fun to watch. Speaking of the entire Tigers team as a whole, when you're looking at this rotation, obviously they go ahead and get rid of Jack Flaherty at the deadline. That's going to be like the biggest conversation we talk about this entire playoffs if Detroit makes it. You know, what, you know, this pitching rotation, how they done. You know, you mentioned how many innings that the bullpen had to take over yesterday. They were kind of at a luxury because of that, because Skubal pitched so well the day before. But Keiter Montero did not have his stuff yesterday, and that's something that was an issue. And that's something that they kind of relied on during this winning streak to get into the postseason. He had, I think, 14 scoreless innings in a row before his last two starts. And that's something that's going to have to get improved. So if you cannot just rely on Tarek Skubal for the postseason. Although Detroit has a really exciting team right now, the pitching rotation is still questionable, and I think that does have to be questioned when you're talking about them in the playoffs.
Yeah, the thing there for Montero, he's one of the two regular traditional starters that they've kind of used, you know, in the, you know, going back to when he came up in late July. He's almost every outing but one where he had an opener in front of him has been as a traditional starter, right? And a lot of these 7 innings, 6 innings, 5 innings, 6 1/3, 6 1/3. He had a complete game shutout of Colorado early in September. So having not getting length out of him is a concern about the rest of the weekend, because the way it's kind of set up is Skubal and Montero go back to back, and they both usually give you traditional outings. You're able to kind of take a two-day, not a complete break, but essentially somewhat of a break for the bullpen for 2 days. And then the bullpen has 3 days of heavy usage where you use openers and bulk guys and you throw five guys, six guys in a game. And then you turn around and you get these 2 days off again. So Montero going short does give you a little bit of questions about coming up this weekend, what's going to happen for Detroit. But overall, I think the Tigers are in a good position. They're continuing to be hot. I think they're going to be fine and will make the postseason at this point. I don't see Minnesota or Seattle figuring it out. I don't see Minnesota or Seattle getting to the point where They're able to make it in. Seattle's 8-1 win over the Astros last night, notwithstanding. Shout out Shea Whitcomb, 4 errors. Always tough for a guy. You hate to see that. It's funny. Of the 8 runs allowed by Houston pitching, 3 were earned because of the errors, right? Yusei Kikuchi gives up 2 runs, no earned in 6 innings, and takes a loss because, one, they only scored 1 run, but then 2, all of the errors, you know, just it was rough. So
on the flip side, for the Twins, they might not make it either, but their win alone, Byron Buxton picked up his 100th win or 100th game of the season. I mean, that's a win in itself for the Twins, because he has been injured for the last, it feels like the last decade. So it's nice to finally see him get at least 100 games in.
Also, I grabbed him for $1 in Dynasty on a 3-year contract, and I'm like, let's go. The last time he played 100 games in a season was 2017, when he played 140 and was an 18th place finisher in the MVP voting after batting .253 with 29 stolen bases and 16 home runs, which,
and that was the only time he hit it right before, right?
It's the only second time he's ever broken 100 games. His 2022 All-Star season, he had 92 total games. He started off a little bit hotter, hit 28 homers, but he got hurt later in the season, if I remember right. So second time in his career that he has played 100 games in a season. His 162 game average for his career is 28 homers and 20 stolen bases a season. So if this dude was completely healthy, and granted, he hasn't stolen double digit bags since 2019, but if this dude was completely healthy, you can see how he could have been one of the top 5 center fielders in baseball. He's just had so many injuries over the year where he's not the same version of himself this
15,
year.
15, 20 years from now, we're going to have people on YouTube, if that's still a thing, making videos of Byron Buxton doing a what if video. And it's going to happen because of his stats and his injuries. If not, they should. And they should look back. Yeah. The career that he should have had, it should have been a lot better.
I will say, though, the thing that I like about this, it wasn't just DH to give him days off. 92 games in the outfield this year. So 92 games in center, and he graded out positively defensively, 73rd percentile, plus 4 run value. Base running, he's been one of the best players in baseball running the bases. Sprint speed is just short of 30 feet per second, so 96th percentile. He's been healthy. He's been effective. He just hasn't played enough. And isn't the same player that he was in his heyday, but is still promising. And I'm happy with Byron Buxton. I'm happy that he got 100 games. A team that didn't get games in, the Atlanta Braves and New York Mets. MLB, a couple hours before that game was supposed to start last night, game 2, Braves won the first one on Tuesday. MLB announced that both Wednesday and Thursday games were being postponed because of the weather in Atlanta and the coming weather today. Reminder that that hurricane is going to be making landfall this evening. There's been heavy rain through the area already, a separate storm from the hurricane. The hurricane's supposed to come through overnight Thursday and into the early part of the day on Friday. Early indications as of now, they think Atlanta should be able to play Friday night against the Royals, but those two games are being made up on Monday as a traditional doubleheader. So what could potentially happen here? The Mets are leaving town to go to Milwaukee. They'll play Milwaukee, get down on Sunday afternoon. That's a day game. All games on Sunday are day games. There's no Sunday night baseball, I don't believe. And then they'll fly back to Atlanta. Those two teams could play up to two games on Monday. And then I'm just going to assume at the end of that, both teams are in. If both teams are in the postseason, one of them will be flying to San Diego for a Tuesday first pitch. The other one will be flying to Milwaukee to take on the Brewers. How badly did MLB screw this up? Because it feels like the easiest things to do. Both teams were off on Monday. The Mets had Sunday night baseball at home, but that shouldn't have precluded them from flying to Atlanta that night and playing a game on Monday. I'll remind you, last season, Atlanta was scheduled to have Sunday night baseball, and then they had to fly to Oakland to play 3 games in Oakland Monday through Wednesday. So why didn't they either do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series or a doubleheader on Tuesday and play on Wednesday and get the Mets out of town?
Yeah, lack of planning had something to do with money. I'm sure that's the case. We did see something, some reports coming out yesterday that the Braves didn't want to move the schedule even up a couple hours because of ticket sales, and they didn't want to mess with that and then move logistics around, bring concessions in, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of things around just moving a game up a couple hours. I get it. There's a lot of work to be done. And even if that was the case yesterday, if they would move the game up to, let's just say, a 1 o'clock game or an even 11 o'clock game, the rain started pretty early yesterday. So who knows if the game would have even got in the first game. So let alone doing all those logistics for nothing. I do think that they dropped the ball on not playing Monday. They both had an off day. We talked about it on the side. We're pretty sure that the Mets flew in on Monday or on Sunday, yeah. Right? So
they're not late.
So there was probably an opportunity to definitely play that game. And I think they dropped the ball on that one. And I think that does come down to, again, logistics. And maybe the Braves didn't want to move because this is a pretty high impactful series. And for ticket sales, it would hurt them, right? So,
that's the thing. The Braves had 41,000 there on Tuesday night. I find it hard to believe if MLB said on Sunday, hey, we're moving everything up a day, and they moved the game from Tuesday to Monday, that Atlanta probably still wouldn't have had 35,000 people there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the case too, especially if, you know, the majority of fans know that there's a storm coming. So yeah. I think they would rather have a game like that if they can make it on a Monday rather than a Tuesday and possibly potentially miss your whole game because of a storm. So no, I'm with you. I think they definitely dropped the ball. I'm just trying to make some assumptions on why they didn't do it. And that's probably a bad idea on my behalf. However, I really don't know why they would miss out on something like this, because it seemed like such a clear picture to play on Monday, and they didn't do it. Now they have to play the following Monday on a doubleheader. And then, you know, regardless, if both teams make this, if one of the teams make it, that team is going to be screwed, especially the one who goes to San Diego. Come on, you're going to play two games on a Monday and then go to San Diego.
Probably the best team in the postseason, honestly.
You're asking to get cooked. You're asking to get cooked.
All indications, and we don't have anything official from MLB, of course not. All indications are that they won't need to play both games on Monday if the playoff position is fully decided and can't change on the result of the second game. Part of me wonders if the Arizona Diamondbacks completely collapse, and they did not last night. They did win last night over the San Francisco Giants 8-2. If the Diamondbacks collapse down the stretch and both teams who have a tiebreaker over Arizona, if both teams are a game up on Arizona entering play on Monday, if MLB will just not make them play these games at all. Part of me wonders if that's going to be the case. I don't know. I doubt they'll probably bang both of them, but you could see something. I think the worst case scenario is let's say the Braves are up by a game over the Mets. I don't know how that would happen, actually, now that I think about it. But I think the worst case scenario is these two teams tie on the tiebreaker, on the first tiebreaker, which is head-to-head record. Braves are up by one right now on the season. If you play one game and the Mets win and you're now tied and the standings are tied, you go into a second or third tiebreaker. But I don't think Atlanta's going to be able to catch them unless the Mets struggle over the weekend. It's a whole complicated thing, but this could have been avoided. That's the point we're making. This could have been avoided. So
yeah, it looks like the Braves, if they win and sweep the Royals this weekend, they'll be able to get the 89 wins. Diamondbacks are already at 88. So if the Diamondbacks win just one game this weekend, I'm pretty sure you're going to have to play both games on Monday.
Well, Braves have the tiebreaker over the Diamondbacks, though. So you'd have to get two wins for the Diamondbacks to ensure that the games have to get played on Monday. But either way, that's kind of neither here nor there. American League East injuries. We got some news yesterday about the two teams at the top, the Baltimore Orioles, who continue to not let the Yankees win the division. They won 9-7 yesterday. The Baltimore Orioles have announced Grayson Rodriguez will not be coming back this year. He's not healed enough in order to return for the postseason. So they are now preparing him for 2025. The Yankees had scheduled starter Nestor Cortes get scratched that morning and ended up going on the IL with a flexor strain. They said at best, he could theoretically return for the ALCS, but they don't know. Which of these injuries, at the end of the day, is going to end up being more impactful? Losing Nestor Cortes, losing Grayson Rodriguez?
I'm going to have to go with Grayrod. I think losing Grayson Rodriguez is the biggest deal here. And although I like, you know, guys like Corbin Burns, I think Dean Kramer's done a really good job lately for the Orioles as well. That's just a lot of injuries for Baltimore in that rotation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kyle Bradish is out. John Means is still out. Tyler Wells. You still got Felix Bautista, who's not returning. And then you add, you know, Grayson Rodriguez. Those alone, you know, those are three solid starters in your closer heading into the postseason that you had last year that you didn't have this year going into the playoffs. And in the playoffs last year, you couldn't win a game. So I think obviously having Corbin Burns is huge. Dean Kramer doesn't hurt. But man, that's I think that's big. Now with the Nestor Cortes side, you have a guy that was in your, you have a little bit of depth, right? Marcus Stroman was slated to go into your bullpen. He did not look good yesterday taking over.
But that was also a, like, that's also one of those things. You're a starter. You don't know you're going to start until midday that day. Not six earned on 10 hits and 3 1/3. That's not good. It's also hard to blame him for being thrown into that.
Right. 100%. And I think that if you look at, you know, if you look at with the Yankees and the Orioles, you'd probably have to compare Marcus Stroman to Cade Povich, you know, right now. That's probably where those comparisons are. And I think I'd take Stroman over Povich at the moment heading into the postseason. And most likely both of them are going to be in the bullpen anyways as we get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But the top three starters in the Yankees right now look a lot better than the top three starters on the Orioles heading into the playoffs. So, yeah, I do think Grayrod is the biggest concern. And the Orioles haven't been playing as good as you would hope they would be playing as of late, Lindsay. They have one of the worst records in baseball in the second half, despite what their record looks like right now as a whole. So I do think that that is the bigger concern. I think Baltimore, I'll be shocked if Baltimore does get a playoff win this year. I think that could be the biggest goal, like not even winning a playoff series, like just them getting a playoff win, which is crazy to say, might be a win in itself.
I agree with you there. Like Grayson Rodriguez was going to be needed in the postseason. Right now, my Yankees rotation is like for the postseason. Garrett Cole, Carlos Rodon, Luis Gil, Clark Schmidt are your four, right? Whereas the Orioles, it's Corbin Burns and then a hope and a prayer. Zach Eflin went 4 2/3, 3 runs, 4 hits, 5 walks. A guy that doesn't strike out a ton of players, but doesn't walk a lot. 5 walks is concerning. And so, like, I'm really not confident in where these Orioles are as you enter the postseason. And it's just, this is, that's not good. And it's hard to see them advancing very far given what's going on and given the rotation and the pitching issues. Obviously, dudes can get hot in the postseason. We know that. It's just, that's definitely more concerning here. Let's hop in a quick pitch real quick. Couple rapid fire things here. Shohei Ohtani yesterday, one of the key figures in the 4-3 Dodgers win over the Padres. But the news here is his 50-50 home run ball caught by a fan in Miami, did not return it to the team. The ball will open at auction on Friday, starting bid of $500,000. Over or under $10 million for that ball?
Oh, I thought you were going to say $1 million, and I was going to like easily be ready to say over. Man, $10 million? That sounds... I'm going to have to say, man, what did McGuire McGuire's ran for $3 million back in 1999. So 25 years ago, $3 million. Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani's in 1999.
Shohei Ohtani's is going to go over $10 million. In this economy, yeah, we're going to get over $10
million. See, I
be close.
I threw out $10 million. Now that I'm looking at the auction listing, apparently there is a buy it now option for $4.5 million. You can just give him $4.5 million right now and get that ball.
What?
Or you can
no,
get it.
It's not.
Yeah, it's just wild to me that this is, I absolutely...
$4.5? That sounds pretty low in comparison to what McGuire's home run went 25 years ago. Like, only a million more?
I really think this ball is going to go for a lot more than 4.5. I think this... I mean, I don't know if it'll be 10. I threw that out kind of on vibes. I really think it's going to go for more than 4.5, though. I think when you factor in how much bigger the audience is for Shohei, because you have all the domestic fans, but you also have the international fans. I really think if that ball went for $3 million in 1999, the 70th home run ball, I really think this one's going to go for more than 4.5. I do believe it is authenticated as well. It did get authenticated before he left. It's been with the auction house almost immediately after. By the next Monday, they already had it in their possession on consignment. I think this is going to be much more than that.
Me too. Yeah, I'm surprised there's even a buy it now option because, okay. All right, well, I guess it probably won't reach 10 million, but I'd be shocked if it doesn't get to that buy it now number then.
Yeah. All right, Aaron Judge hits his 57th home run last year. He was cursed by Paw Patrol for a while. He now has 4 homers in 4 games. Does Aaron Judge get to 60 home runs this year?
You know, although he was stopped by Chase, I don't think Chase is going to be able to be on the case for this one. I think that he's going to miss 60 home runs. And I don't think makes a bad season by any means, but there's just not enough games. I know he's hitting, you know, 4 and 4 games, and there's still enough time for him to do that if he hits one in every game. But I think he's going to either, you know, take a step back, or he might, you know, not play in a couple of these games over the weekend because, you know, although they do have a bye coming up in the postseason, you know, getting a chance to rest Aaron Judge before the playoffs start is probably a good idea. So now I think he misses out. He's at 57 now. Let's go ahead and say he misses it by 1. He goes to 59.
Oh, that would be a heartbreaker. Judge also in this game picked up his 142nd RBI. Insane. It is the most RBIs in a season since 2009 when Milwaukee saw Prince Fielder hit 141. So just kind of an absurd RBI production there. And you see the Juan Soto effect. They gotta re-sign Juan Soto.
Didn't he slump really hard at the beginning of the season too? Like, didn't
he had a poor first month. And so it's funny to think about, like, he could have been over 150 if he had a good first month. He did not do well the first month, but since then he's been pretty hot.
His homers were off too at that first month, if I remember correctly.
The White Sox, the Chicago White Sox, still sitting on 120 wins. They score a run in the 10th and walk off the Los Angeles Angels. So they are now on, I believe this is a 2-game win streak, and they were refusing to lose game 121. Really interesting to see what happens there. And talk about what happens. The Oakland A's play the final game in the Oakland Coliseum today. That is an early afternoon game. Shout out to MLB for making the final game in the Coliseum a Thursday afternoon. Just insistent that they do not get to actually do anything here. But fans are really mad about the giveaway. Have you heard about the promotional giveaway here that the A's are doing?
Are they the actual seats of the Coliseum? Because I saw somebody trying to do a giveaway on that.
We saw a fan steal some last night. Yes. I also saw the groundskeepers for the Oakland A's filling people's water bottles with dirt from the infield. Super cool of them to do that.
That's cool. I like that.
But no, they are giving away to the first 25,000 fans in attendance. They are giving away miniature replicas of the Coliseum. But one, they're awful. If you've seen them, they do not look very good at all. Two, they're not redeemable until fans leave the game and the promotion starts at the end of the 7th inning. So a lot of fans feel like the goal of this whole promotion was like, hey, we're giving them away as you leave. We start giving them away before the game ends, and they're limited because John Fisher wants the seats to be empty at the end of the game to make his case that Oakland does not care about the team. It's a lot of fans are mad. The hashtag is stay in your seat. And it's just another example of how the Oakland A's, John Fisher, and by extension MLB, who has either explicitly or implicitly endorsed all of this, have completely screwed up this entire process by not standing up to John Fisher and doing anything in this process right.
Yeah, I want to root for the players of the team, and I of course want to give a shout out to the fans who stick around, but I wish no success of the Athletics for whatever the city they go to next. I just can't until John Fisher becomes a former owner of a baseball team. And when he does sell, I'll be the first in line to buy the new hat, the first in line to buy the new t-shirt and support that team as it is. But right now, there's no way that I can even think about rooting for them. So until now, I hope that they have the record worse than the White Sox. I hope they break the White Sox record in 2025, Lindsay. I can't wait for that to happen.
While they play in a minor league ballpark. Yep. Embarrassing how they even got to this point. Okay, wrapping up. Not a full slate of games today. We've got 9 games. Obviously, Braves Mets, we're going to be part of that. They're not. Best, like, which is the better matchup? Joe Musgrove versus Walker Buehler as the Padres take on the Dodgers, or Corbin Burnes versus Gerrit Cole as the Orioles take on the Yankees?
Ooh, man, I'm going to go with the late one, Musgrove versus Buehler, because I do think that there's still a lot of questions to be answered with that Dodgers rotation. Walker Buehler is the big one that you have to circle around. He had a good start in his last time out. I think it helped him save a spot on the playoff roster. Now let's see if he can get himself maybe as a potential game 3 starter moving into the playoffs. So yeah, I think that's a big one. I want to see what Walker Buehler can do. And that series is tied right now, and it's a big implications. The Padres can still win the NL West. And I will say a little sidebar here. A
lot of help there, but they can.
Yep. Kumar Rocker also pitching for the Rangers. I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah. Joe Musgrove, since the All-Star break, 8 starts, 3-1, 2.05 ERA. He's been great since he came back from injury. For me, though, I'm going to go Burnes versus Cole. I think, one, best matchup of two starters, that you're going to see. Just the skill of the two pitchers, as well as the stakes here. The Orioles are still not dead in the AL East. The Yankees have been sitting on a Yankees win or an Orioles loss gets them the division. This is now the third game that's been true, and they can't seem to put away Baltimore. So tonight, you either get to watch the Yankees celebrate winning the East, or you get to watch Baltimore continue to stay alive on a great pitching duel between two former Cy Young winners. And selfishly, I pre-wrote a piece for Sports Illustrated about how the Orioles botched the trade deadline and gave the division to the Yankees, and it's been waiting to run for a couple days. So I'm rooting for the Yankees in this one just because I thought it was a good piece, and I want to see it go up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good call. I don't think I can ever in the right mind say go Yankees over the Orioles, but for this case, I might be a little excited if they get the win so you can be able to get that post up.
There you go. Thank you. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, September 26th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Leave a comment down below. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new episode. And either way, tell your baseball-loving friends that there's a great show out there that recaps on a daily basis what happened in Major League Baseball. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.